Welcome to chapter 13. Believe it or not, we have this week and next week, and we'll be done with our study of nouns. So just hang in there, just tonight and next time, and we'll have completed our study of noun forms here in Mounce's book. Chapter 13 begins out with an exegetical insight regarding dikaiosune, a very important word translated righteousness. We know that this word in particular is descriptive of God in the ultimate sense as being the one who is just, the one who is righteous. And we also know this word is very important as it relates to our relationship with God, since we ourselves are unrighteous without dikaiosune, and as a result in need of a righteousness supplied unto us. This is one of the things that this insight brings out regarding Luther. Luther was right when he wrote, "For God does not want to save us by our own, but by an extraneous righteousness, one that does not originate in ourselves, but comes to us from beyond ourselves." And the very famous line from, was this a solid rock? Mm-hmm. "My hope is built on nothing less than Jesus' blood and dikaiosune." Righteousness, right? So, a great, just real quick glimpse into an important vocabulary word. Okay, well, tonight we talk about the demonstrative pronouns, hutas and akainos or akainos. Both of these words are important. They are the English words this or these, that, and those. They're called demonstrative pronouns, and you can kind of remember them this way, right? Because it's like if I was going to demonstrate something. I said, "Look at this, and how about that?" Right? Somebody does some kind of crazy trick, and they go, "What do you think of that?" Right? Or I'm wanting to draw your attention to something in particular, and I might say, "Look at this." And we want to say something about this rather than those. So we'll use both of those terms sometimes, even in the same sentence, to demonstrate the difference between the two different things. So in English, we have this and these, that's the singular plural, and then that and those, singular plural, for these demonstrative pronouns. For example, he says here, this book is the greatest Greek textbook. Those students really work hard. So he says here that demonstratives are never inflected except to indicate singular and plural. Same word can be either a pronoun, "that is mine," or an adjective, "that car is mine." And you'll see in Greek, same thing. The words this and those, that and these, or this and these, and that and those, are can be used similarly. They can either be used as adjectives, "that car," "that book," "this pen," "that girl." So all that can be functioning as an adjective. It also, though, can be used as a pronoun in the place of something else. So, "that is mine," or "I like that," you know, those kinds of uses as well. Now in the Greek, look at 13.3, the demonstratives in Greek are hutas, that's the this, these, and akainos, that's that or those. They function the same way as they do in English, both as pronouns and as adjectives. You'll see the first bullet there. When a demonstrative functions as a pronoun, its case is determined by its function in the sentence. Its number and gender are determined by the antecedent, just like any other pronoun, right? We've already learned this with pronouns. So if you had, remember, autos, our third person personal pronoun, if I was asking you what's going to determine its case in a sentence, you would say function. Function. But if I asked you what determines its gender or number, you would say antecedent. The word that the pronoun is standing in the place of. So if I had just talked about Leah, then when I want to refer to her with a personal pronoun, third person personal pronoun, I'll say to the subject, she. Right? So the number and gender came from the fact that I'm referring to Leah. The reason I use she is because its function is a subject in that sentence. If I say I gave the book to her, that'll be because it's sitting as an object in that sentence, we use the objective case, her rather than she. So similarly in Greek, the with whenever something functions as a pronoun, in this case, a way of a demonstrative pronoun, the gender and the number are going to be determined from its antecedent. So if I say that is mine. And I'm referring to, let's say, use a word, hamartia. Let's say sin. I'm referring to sin. I say, that is mine. Right? That sin is mine. So that's functioning for sin. The Greek word sin is, in what gender?
Oh, feminine.
Feminine. Very good. So the when I say that is mine, that is going to have a feminine gender. It's going to be singular if I'm referring to sin. So the sins would be plural. And it's going to be in the nominative case there because it's functioning as the subject. So you guys all got that? Whenever we have it functioning as a pronoun, it's going to function just like the pronouns we've already looked at together. Now, it can also function as an adjective, and whenever that happens, its case number and gender are all determined by the word that it's modifying, right? Just like all adjectives. Remember, agathos, ha-agathos, logos, the good word. Agathos is masculine, singular, nominative, because logos is masculine, singular, nominative, okay? So, if it's functioning as adjective, case, number, and gender all will match the word that it's modifying. Okay? With that, we've got the building blocks for this, and the endings aren't so bad. You're going to be used to these. Look at page 108 with me. 13.4, the forms of hutas. Know with me that in each case, you either have a rough breathing or you have a tau that starts off the word. Okay? In general, it's tau starting them off. Just note with me, you only have a couple where you don't, where you have the rough breathing. It happens with the nominative singular for the masculine and feminine. See, those are rough breathings there. And then in the nominative plural, you have rough breathings starting off those words. Everywhere else, it's a tau that starts off these words. Remember, the lexical form is going to be hutas. It's going to be the masculine, singular, nominative case. So hutas is the word. But it can happen masculine, feminine, or neuter, and it can happen in any of the cases, okay? And it'd be singular or plural. So just look down the chart with me. I just want to read down the rows, starting with the masculine. We have hutas, and then tutu, right? Tutu, tuto, and tuton. And then below that, hutoi, tutone, Tutois. Tutus. Now those endings, though, you see very familiar to you, right? That looks just like original stuff. The only thing, trick there is in the nominative singular and nominative plural, you don't have the tau, instead you have a rough breathing. Okay? So other than that, those endings should be very familiar to you. Now look at the feminine. We have haute. Tautes. Tautes. Taute. Tautain. Tautain. Tautai. Tautai. I'm sorry, I didn't say tau, I'm sorry. Hautai, excuse me.
Hautai.
Hautai. Say it once more.
Hautai.
And then two-tone.
Two-tone.
That one's interesting. Do you see how that has an oo rather than an ow? That's the one you got to keep track of there. You'll notice the genitive plural all the way across is the exact same word, two-tone. Okay? So note that instead of an alpha upsilon, it's an omicron upsilon there. We'll talk about what the rule is in just a minute. The next dative plural, tautes.
Tautes.
And then tautas.
Tautas.
Very good. Now let's just do the neuters quickly since we've done the rest of them. Tuta.
Tuta.
Tutu.
Tutu.
Tuto.
Tuto.
Tuta.
Tuta.
And then tauta.
Tauta.
You see this has gone to alpha. You see that there? Then two-tone.
Two-tone.
Tutois.
Tutois.
And tauta.
Tauta.
Now there again, alpha. Now here's the trick. You go, when do you know if it's the alpha? When do you know if it's omicron? It's depending on the ending. That will be your trick. The final vowel of the stem will tell you which one you want. If it's an alpha or an eta, you're going to want to use an alpha at the beginning. If it's an omicron at the end of the stem, you're going to use an omicron at the beginning. Okay? So look at a good example to show this is in the feminine. So look at the feminine. You see the very last letter in that nominative singular is an eta. So it's going to use an alpha at the front. Again, genitive singular, dative singular, accusative singular, all etas. There is that final stem vowel. So it's all going to be alphas at the front. Now look down below that in the plurals. Again, that first one, we have an alpha iota at the end, so it's going to be alpha. So alpha or eta, you're going to have an alpha in the beginning vowel. But you see with own, there we don't have an alpha or eta. It's an omega. And as a result, it's going to be an omicron. Two-tone there for the genitive plural. And then again, dative plural, accusative plural, have alphas at the ends, so they'll have alphas at the beginnings. Now look at the neuter. Because you see over the masculine, it's all the it's none of them end with an alpha or an eta, so it's all omicrons. Ooh, 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 ooh. But over in the neuter, it's all oohs except for the nominative plural and accusative plural, because the final vowel, stem vowel is what? Alpha. And when it's an alpha, it ends up then as an alpha upsilon in the stem at the beginning. Okay? That's the trick. That's a little trick to remember which one it is when you're checking through. So what I would tell you to do is this. Just memorize the endings. The endings are the endings you guys already know. So then from that, deduce what the front thing would be. Now remember, the only time that you really have to worry about that too much is for the purpose of like the immediate quiz, where I've got a box and I want you to just regurgitate this to me. After that, in translation, the endings are going to give away what you need to know anyway. Remember, you're not going to be writing out these words in Greek in general. Just going to be for the purpose of memorizing the chart in the beginning. But that's at least a little trick to remember that. He does go over that trick on page 109 in the first and second, the little bullets there of number 3. Okay? So in case you didn't get that, you can go ahead and read it for yourself on page 109. Look at 13.5 with me quickly. You notice with these, you guys are familiar with these endings. Sigma, upsilon, the iota, that subscripts, nu. And then, I'm looking just down the masculine side there. And then the plurals, iota, omicron, iota, or just iota, I'm sorry. And then omega, nu, iota, sigma, and upsilon, sigma. You guys know all those endings. Same thing with the feminine. Feminine, you see those, you have the atus at the top, you have alphas down below. You guys are all familiar with those endings. All the very beginning of our time together. And then with the neuter, the only difference here is that you have the nominative singular and accusative singular, like up above with tuta, which I didn't comment on yet, but now I'll comment on it now. The nominative singular and accusative singular for tuta over in the neuter, you'll see that there it's just the stem. There's no ending being put on that. And the same thing is true down here below. And on this word, all smooth breathing, and you'll have the omicron ending on the nominative singular and accusative singular for the neuter. But other than that, this thing looks just like the endings you learned. The only difference before you learned like ergon, it would have been a new ending on both the nominative and accusative singular. So this one, akenos, should be very, very easy. Okay? It's not even changing the stem at all. The deal with futas is a little bit weird. You've got rough breathing and going to the tau, so you got that little thing you got to just keep in mind. And then a little bit of the alpha, the omicron, which one is it that we're using in the stem. But other than that, those are the two to learn here. Remember,
it's like futas.
Futas.
It's kind of mimicking the article maybe a little bit.
Yes. Yeah, it's very good. Very good. Yes. Yeah, that's a great point to make there, Randy. Is it is mimicking the article because it's the nominative singular and nominative plural in the masculine and feminine that you get those rough breathings. Excellent. So you just gotta remember that, and you're set to go. Good. Okay. Let's look at 13.7 and 13.8. Just here quickly mentions what we already set up. It can function as a pronoun or as an adjective. Now, if it functions as a pronoun, it will not be modifying a word. Okay? It'll be like a substantival adjective where it's got enough substance to itself, it sits by itself, it's not going to be sitting in a modifying way at all. And usually what we do then is we do, for the sake of translation, sometimes insert man or one or women or things, depending upon what context requires. When I don't have to, I like to leave it rough when I can. So I like to leave it this or that, and not supply that word until I have to. So, if I just give you kind of way I would normally translate a text. I'll leave it rough, and I'll kind of come back through it and be like, okay, what is this referring to? And especially remember that antecedents can be helpful to determining what is the this or the that, or the these or the those standing for. Okay, remember, that's a wonderful thing about Greek, is those endings really help you identify what the antecedent is. Certainly you've had a time before, you've been reading something and you come across a pronoun and you're not sure exactly what the thing that's referring back to is. So anyway, that's a wonderful thing about Greek, is it gives us a little bit more of a clue about that. Okay, and then for it can also function as an adjective, 13.8. If a demonstrative is functioning as an adjective, it occurs in the predicate position, although it functions as an attributive adjective. This is weird. It's very strange. You've learned that when an adjective is functioning as an attributive, that, remember, the article happens right before it. So we have like ha agathos, logos. So agathos is the adjective there, meaning good. We have ha right before it, so we would call that articular, right? The article precedes the adjective, it's articular. And he also tells us that is the attributive position. So instead of being predicate position, predicate would mean it would come after like a linking verb. So if we had agathos halagos, it would be the word is good. Because agathos doesn't have the article before it. Article is before the noun, not before the adjective. But if you have an article before an adjective, that's articular, it's also an attributive position, so we would say the good word. Now, here, what's interesting with houtos and akenos is that when they function like an adjective, they're actually in predicate position. So here you have houtos haanthropos. So you might want to say the man is this. But you can kind of think, kind of a little difficult, weird construction anyway in English, and you wouldn't translate that way. That what that means is this man.
Okay.
Or even haanthropos houtos, or houtos happens after. Again, you see the article is preceding the noun, not the demonstrative here. Again, it would be this man. Or akenoi hoi anthropoi, here, those men. You wouldn't translate the men are those. You would translate those men. So just remember, this is the reverse of how you learned it with adjectives. Adjectives, if you had your agathos ha anthropos, you would translate the man is good. But here with the demonstrative, you don't translate it as predicate, even though it's in predicate position. You'll translate it as an adjective.
It's saying it's in predicate position, but it's before it, so I'm thoroughly confused.
Okay, predicate position just means that there's no article before it. That's it. It can be anywhere in the sentence, Amy.
Okay.
Yeah, because for when we talk about predicate position, all that means in Greek is that the article does not immediately precede the adjective.
Okay.
So let me just write this up here. So here's our noun anthropos, and here's the word agathos, good. Okay. Now if the article happens here, and there's nothing before this, this is predicate position. It's an arthros because it has no article. It's considered predicate. So we would translate the man is good, is how we translate that. Now, if we had an article before this, it was double. Ha agathos, ha anthropos, it would be the good man. We could take out this article after before anthropos, ha agathos, anthropos, it would still be translated the good man. All that matters is we look at the adjective and look before it. If there's an article before the adjective is functioning attributively.
But if they're both inarthrous, then you make the judgment.
If they're both, yeah, if there's no article, then it can be up for grabs. And context will help you to translate. So if there's no article at all, it could be good, the good man, or the man is good. And that, and again, this could also happen over here. Agathos. This could be gone. If we have anthropos ha agathos, that would still be translated the good man. Article precedes the adjective. Okay? If you had this, ha anthropos agathos, article precedes the noun but not preceding the adjective, would be the man is good. Okay? It's all about the article. Where is it in reference to the article? Okay? Now, you learn all that with the adjective. Now, I got to tell you, reverse it when it comes to houtos and ekainos. Those words are not, they when they're in predicate position from what we learned this way, they're actually functioning attributively. Okay, and so you can look at that there at the bottom of page 109. We kind of go through that again. Look at top page 110. Sometimes a demonstrative pronoun weakens in its force and functions as a personal pronoun. Here you're seeing houtos, starting off the example he gives here, but being translated instead of this, being translated here as he. And so there is some overlap here. And Randy, I think you've asked some questions about this before. There's some overlap between the article, the demonstrative pronoun, and the personal pronoun. So just be aware of that. So for a translation's sake, sometimes that's the case. 13.10 mentions the fifth and final case. You've been learning that there's a five-case system here in Mounce's work, but you've really only been dealing with four. The reason why is the fifth case, the vocative, is not all that prevalent. You have lots and lots of them. Although, you know, it has been so wonderful with the Sermon on the Mount. It's almost like if we've been just like following each other week after week. This last Sunday, we were looking at the word Kyrie, or Kyrie, but usually they just say Kyrie, is the word Lord. And Lord, Lord, you know, we say to you, Lord, Lord, that is vocative. Those are terms of address, a case of address. And so here is the example. This is the exact passage we looked at on Sunday. It says here, upas halegon moi, curry, and then so here you say not, that's u, right? Not, and then pas is all or every, right? So translated literally here, not every, and then you have halegon. Legon is a participle. You would translate that saying, and I like to translate has there as one. So I would translate not every one saying, and then moi. You guys know that one. This is dative singular to me. Very good. Not everyone saying to me, and then the address. Lord, Lord. Then we have aselusetai, and this is will enter. And aistatain basileon, into the kingdom, ton uranon.
The heavens.
Very good. Of the heavens. So here we translate usually into the kingdom of heaven. So excellent. But here we have an example of kyrie, kyrie. There's the vocative. And you'll notice at the end of those words, it's epsilons. Look at this real quickly with me. Look at the bullets below this. Here's, for the most part, the simple way to notice the vocative case. In the plural, look at that first bullet, the vocative is always identical to the nominative plural. So it's going to be just like your nominative plural. So you give the example, anthropoi. So it'd be like, men! Men! Lend me your ears, you know, that sort of thing, using men, right? Yeah, there you go. In the next bullet, in the singular first declension, the vocative is the same as the nominative. So, adelphe, there. So, sister. Yeah. In the singular second declension, the vocative ending is usually epsilon, like the example given here above, curie, which came from curias, right? So that epsilon ending is pretty, it stands out really strong when you see one of those. And then in the singular third declension, the vocative is usually the bare stem of the word. And sometimes the stem vowel does change. And so here you have the vocative of pater becomes pater, right? Father.
Father.
So that is the vocative case, the case of address. And he gives just a couple other odds and ends on page 111. He talks about degrees in the adjective. An adjective can have 3 degrees, be positive, comparative, or superlative. We get at those by saying good, gooder, goodest, right? No. we say good, better, best, right? That's normally how we would say that. But we get at it like holy, holier, holiest. So a positive degree would be like holy. Comparative would be holier. Superlative, holiest. Typically, you've been acquainted with this, that in the Old Testament you usually get at that by repeating words. So you would say holy is kadosh in the Hebrew language kadosh, and then holier, kadosh, kadosh, holiest, kadosh, 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 holy, holy, holy.
That's why the
trifold repetition, holy, holy, holy is the Lord God Almighty who was and is and is to come. These kinds of descriptions. That all comes from Hebrew and Aramaic construction. So when you have even that happening in Greek you had words that God had comparative and superlatives. So if the Greek is repeating itself like that, it can be emphasis or it can be just playing upon Hebrew, Old Testament ways of that kind of stuff, exactly. So it could be either Hebraic culture, you know, coming into the use in Greek language, or it could just be a quotation of Old Testament, specific Old Testament passages. But one thing that's pointed out here is that sometimes that superlative degree kind of fell out of usage, and it was being done through the comparative. So sometimes in a translation, it might become obvious that not two things are being compared. It's just being a statement being made, but it's a comparative adjective being used. And in those cases, usually what you have is it's actually a superlative use of the comparative. Comparative had kind of gotten swallowed into superlatives. So instead of saying better, it might actually mean best in that particular situation. Randy, you asked something.
I was going to ask something. Why is it that we translate kingdom of heaven, kingdom of heaven, instead of kingdom of the heavens? Is there some sort of grammatical reason, or is it just a cultural
thing? I think it's more cultural than anything else. Actually, when I translate, like for example, when I translated that passage before I preached on Sunday, I translated it, in my translation, heavens, of the heavens. We just wouldn't say that in English.
Do you think there's a theological difference between the two translations? I can't think of any, but
not that I can think of.
Okay.
And I'd be kind of surprised if there was a deep theological implication to be had there when people for so long have dealt with that phrase and just translated kingdom of heaven and nobody. Again, I have to think about an example. We have to maybe find some examples. It'd be interesting. You could do this, Randy. Look up the word uranos. Find it in its singular usages. When is the word used singularly?
Yeah,
okay. Because I'm so used to seeing it in the plural, it's hard for me to even think of an example where it's just like the heaven rather than the heavens. So it might be an interesting thing. We can maybe do a little Bible work search.
Okay.
And check out when does the singular usage of the word happen. Because that might then indicate if there is any significance whatsoever to using the plural in these cases. So I would look at an example of plural. And I'm guessing, without having done the study, that we're going to find that it's almost always plural usage. You know, maybe that's why. And so it's like, okay, well, that's just the way it was described. Good question, though, otherwise. Okay, 13.12 just describes crosses, which is when you have two words that get combined together. There's a few examples of these. He does go to appendix page 338 if you want to go take a look at a few other examples of this. Page 338. Okay, I'm sorry. It's going to be at the very beginning of your appendix if you don't have the newest edition of Mounce's book. I think it'll still be towards the beginning of it. You'll see here, the one that he gives us here on page 111 is when kai and ego come together and you get kago, meaning and I, okay? Again, the point here is not so much that you guys would ever be doing this, but if you come across a word like kago, it's like, what is that? Then recognize that's crassus. Kai and ego come together. Here's some other ones. Kai and amoi becomes kamoi. Kai and kai becomes kakai. So it gives other examples. I have seen for sure the very last example there. Kai and an or on becomes kan. So there are examples. An on is indeclinable.
Usually
means one or something. And sometimes just you don't even untranslatable kind of thing. It doesn't translate. So, but just be aware that crosses does occur. The most prevalent is kago. And I say to you, that kind of thing. Kago. All right, 13.13, palus, also the word palus, meaning much or many, looks like a cross between a second and third declension word. Just quickly look at this guy with me. You'll see the endings look pretty familiar all the way down. The only thing to note particularly is look at the nominative singular and accusative singular for the masculine and for the neuter. You'll see that the doubled lambda drops to a single. You guys see that with me? It becomes palus, and then you'll see in the genitive singular for masculine, palu, but again, you don't necessarily hear it, you would just see it. But it happens in the nominative singular, accusative singular for the masculine, and then for also for the neuter, palu, palu. So, other than that, though, it's pretty regular. You guys are pretty used to those endings. Again, it's all the very first endings that you guys learn. Which is a wonderful review about these chapters. So we kind of had a couple grammatical concepts, and remember what the demonstrative pronoun is, how it can function. But other than that, we're not talking massive memorizations of charts. So that's why I keep telling everybody, just hang in there. You know, you got this week, you got next week, and you know we're there. I think we just have relative pronouns next week that we'll be looking at. Yeah, chapter 14 is relative pronouns, and so we'll just be looking at those. And it's a very short chapter, so you guys are almost there. Let's quickly go through the vocabulary. Let's quickly go through the vocabulary and then see if we have any questions and we'll be dismissed. First word there, gune.
Gune.
That word meaning woman or wife.
Gune wife.
Yeah, gune. Yeah, or gunai kas is the genitive singular.
Gunai kas.
Gunai kas, good. Dikaiosune.
Dikaiosune.
Very good. Dikaiosunes. Very good. This is righteousness. Yeah, you gotta get a running start on those guys. So it's Dikaiosune. Very good. Dikaiosune. Dodeka.
Dodeka.
That means 12. He'atu. He'ates.
He'autu.
This means himself, herself, itself. Also in the plural means themselves. Ekenos. Ekene. Ekena.
Ekena.
This means that or those, right? The word we just learned this evening. You also notice down there in the previous words, hutas. Haute. Tuta.
Tuta.
Okay, and that's your singular this, or it can be remember, it can be he, she, it in some cases. Also plural these. Okay, that's the this, these. The ekenos is that, those. A.
A.
Which means or than. Note that it's smooth breathing, not rough breathing. Hey would be what?
The.
Very good. In the feminine, right?
Kago.
This is and I, or can be but I. Makarios.
Makaria.
Makaria.
Makarion.
This is blessed or happy, found all over the place in the Beatitudes, right? Blessed is the man, or blessed are the poor in spirit. You'll find that Makarioi is the word found there. Megas.
Megas.
Megale.
Megale.
Mega.
Mega.
This means large or great. Yeah, that should be a good one for you guys to remember, right? Polis.
Polis.
Paletos.
Paletos.
You see that hey, that's a feminine word. This is a weird guy because of that the consonantal iota there. It's kind of a weird situation. So anyway, we have this word means city. Palus.
Palus.
Palay.
Palay.
Palu.
Palu.
Much in the singular, many in the plural. Also be used as an adverb. Adverbially sometimes meaning often. Pos.
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 How.
Oh.
How. And semeon.
Semeon.
Semeon. Semeu. Sorry.
Amen.
That's the gender singular. It means like sign or miracle. Okay? Usually that word translated sign. So to date, you got 151 words. Total percent of total word count in the New Testament, 63.97%. That's pretty cool. All right, any questions as we close this evening? So you're going to read over this chapter. You're going to prepare for a quiz on chapter 12. You can do the exercise. What would it be? Is it exercise 13 of the numbers sticking together?
Yeah.
Exercise 13. You can work on that. And we'll put some of those at the beginning of class next time. Take a quiz. We'll go over chapter 14, do some vocab. And then you'll have, I think, Thanksgiving break. So I'll have a break for a week. We'll come back and we'll take a test on chapters 10 through 14. And then the week after that is the final over all the noun systems, so all 14 chapters. And the plan for the final is it's going to be majorly just translation. Okay? So you'll have some charts and stuff like you always see on that third test. But the final will be pretty much, I'm going to throw you guys a bunch of Greek sentences and let you guys translate some out of the Bible. Okay? My thought for the final for the semester. Okay? All right. God bless you. You are dismissed.